with Jane Steele.
Cultural.
Scientific.
Numerical.
Memorable.
Weekday mornings at 9 on BBC Radio 4.
Start your week getting to grips with the cultural agenda.
She wanted to be known as an avant-garde pioneer.
Discover what science might do for you in the future.
It's incredibly exciting to see these techniques, these ideas being deployed.
Understand the numbers and statistics in your life.
This does seem to be another case of data working in mysterious ways.
And relive moments of modern history and culture.
It's like the joy of a magic trick, and it moves you.
Start the week, the life scientific, more or less, and the reunion. Weekday mornings at 9, next week on Radio 4 and BBC Sounds.
Time now for our 6:30 comedy.
This is Glenn Moore's Almanac, a show all about famous dates in history and what I was doing on those days, starring me, Glenn Moore! Thank you so, so much. Before we start, I've decided I want to make tonight's episode about my university life. A momentous 3 years for me, incredibly formative. I mean, literally, in freshest week of uni, I met my future wife. Still future, starting to lose hope on that one. Yeah, she's married to someone else, so am I. It's not looking good. Now, the date in history I want to talk to you about is November the 1st, 2006. And what a date. Every single 1st of November is interesting. Day after Halloween, of course, so you're still having those Chubba Chub sandwiches. In 1922, the BBC issues the first broadcasting receiving licenses. The very first show to air was a repeat of Holmes Under the Hammer. It's also Prime Meridian Day. If you were to lie face down naked on the Prime Meridian line at the Greenwich Observatory, you actually get to meet the manager. In 2006, Moneymaker by Ludacris is top of the charts. I feel kind of confused about Shake Your Moneymaker as a lyric because I don't know how I'd physically get my hands on my premium bonds. Seabiscuit wins Race of the Century in 1938. I love the movie. Not as good as the original horse. 1997, Titanic premiered. I love that movie. Not as good as the original boat. On this date in 1994, George Lucas starts writing the Star Wars prequels. Not as good as the original, literally any other film. It was also the poisoning of Russian spy Alexander Litvinenko. I want to talk about how that event was eerily relevant to what was going on in my life in 2006. And to help us out tonight, we're actually going to have a bit of audio illumination for you in the shape of a Foley artist. Great work, Jethro. Well done. As you all know, today is Bring Your Cousin to Work Day. My cousin Jethro is a 50-year-old who wants to work in the movies. He's going to be soundtracking the episode and really bringing it to life. So, what was I doing back then? I was starting my first year at uni. It feels odd to think it was back in 2006 that I was at Trinity College, Cambridge, getting rejected at interview stage. That's Jethro right there, so this Foley should be really fun. I, in fact, went to the University of Sheffield. No, that's a red brick, be fair! No, sorry if he seems a bit slow. Between you and me, I think Jethro was a product of inbreeding between my aunt and my uncle. So, university. This was my opportunity to transform myself completely, turn myself into someone new, turn myself into someone interesting. Now, why would I want to do that? Quick history of my life. I lived in London for most of my childhood. We moved to Brighton when I was 15 to pursue my paper round. And I felt I needed to change after a sheltered upbringing. All the other kids were naughty. They spoke back to their parents. They stole vodka from them and topped it up again with water. They misbehaved. Mine, though, was a very insular life. I had overprotective parents. And that wasn't just at home. I mean, at school, they made me wear a crash helmet for maths. Couldn't have embarrassed myself at school more. I was that kid who kept calling the teacher dad, you know, instead of daddy. I'm not saying I failed to make much of an impact socially at school, but on the last day of term, when everyone signed each other's shirts, they all wrote on mine, "To whom it may concern." And to people who did know my name, they didn't even spell my name right. My name is two N's. It's spelled G-L-E-N-N. It's not spelled a picture of a dick. I was treated like an idiot at school, and sometimes I was made fun of even for not being the stupid person. Dumb kids at school would say, like, Persephone, Hermione, not me. I know it's Persephone, I know it's Hermione, because I used to spend all my time reading at Waterstones. They all thought I was unintelligent. And look, I get to some extent, I am unintelligent. I know how ignorant I am. Up until the age of 12, I thought there was a singer called Elephants Gerald. But after school, my job during my gap year was I was a dinner lady at the same school. I was the dinner laddie, so it was fine. The way that's laddie, by the way, as in L-A-D-D-Y, not as they spelt on my leaving tabard, a picture of a dick. So this was a personality and backstory that needed changing. And when I started uni, it was a chance to repaint myself. So I arrived at uni with fake self-confidence, with a real suaveness to me, the sort of stuff I did. Do you ever draw like a faded nightclub stamp on your hand to make it look like you're on a night out last night? No? Okay. I mean, this coolness worked at first. That is, until I took it too far. One night, during a game of truth or dare, in a bid to impress my flatmates, I told them that I was at this uni undercover and that I was actually a spy. Okay, sorry, Jethro, I should have been clearer. Using any sound or music from movies is going to set us back a lot of money. We are on a Radio 4 budget. Our budget is so small, tonight I actually had to provide my own shoes. So the spy thing just came out. I have no spying background qualifications, but at the same time, what a chance to be who I wanted to be. I'd always wanted to sleep with beautiful women, order a cocktail with confidence, run down the length of a speeding train, and not just because my rail card had expired and I couldn't afford the fine. Housemates actually bought it. If you say something with enough conviction, people will go for it. In the same way that I recently convinced my 38-year-old sister that when the Queen was born, stamps had a picture of a baby's head on them. 38. Got to do what you want to do. I always think back to that Jim Carrey commencement speech he gave at a uni in 2014. He said, "You can fail at things you don't want in life, so why not try doing something that you love?" And later that year, he went on to star in Mr. Popper's Penguins. But do I have what it takes to be a spy? Well, I'll tell you what I did the other day. This shows what a spy I can be. Jethro, set the scene, please, as cheaply as possible. I was in this cafe, this lovely public domain sounding cafe. It's busy. I sit in the only seat available. It's next to this guy talking into his phone in English. And as soon as I sit next to him, he immediately looks really guarded and vigilant, and he switches his language from English to French. And this annoys me on two counts. Firstly, he's assumed I'm trying to eavesdrop on him, which is why he's changed language. Secondly, he's assumed I don't understand a word of French, and as a result, wouldn't be able to understand him. So I showed him. I let him have his phone conversation, let him think I couldn't decipher a word of it. Right, how James Bond is this? After half an hour, I got up to leave. I leaned in really closely. I said to this guy in perfect French, I said, I go to the park and play football with my brother. That is how you come across like a cool spy, let me tell you.
Monsieur Jethro, here's your bill for the Chateaubriand.
Jethro, did you go to France for that sound effect?
Monsieur Jethro, remember we have reserved the presidential suite just for you. Bienvenue à Paris.
It's okay, Jethro. You're doing great. Just try to be a bit cheaper. So, why not go for it and pretend to be a spy? What I couldn't have predicted was one of my own housemates had behaviour even more spy-like than my own. Let me take you through my housemates. There was Pete, Jenny, Dimitri, who was Russian, that is relevant, and Raoul, who was Mexican, that's not relevant. I need to tell you about Russian Dimitri. He was from an oligarch family. In fact, his family knew Vladimir Putin. That is perfect. That's very convincing Russian music, Jethro, and very much royalty-free. Thank you. So Dimitri showed me photos of his family staying at his palace. My God, it was a different life. Gold pillars, gold bed, a roaring furnace that just screamed Putin because one of his enemies was in there. Dimitri was a friend, but I was wary of him. He was on a year abroad. Fair enough, I myself had taken a gap year, briefcasing round Europe. For some reason, everything Dimitri did, everyone around me considered the coolest thing in the world. If we went to a restaurant, he'd be in his element. When it came to wine, he knew the perfect Pringles pairing. I mean, even the fact he ordered wine in the first place, he wouldn't do what I would do in ordering, which is go for the second tap water from the top. He just had that aura. He could get away with saying stuff like Fry-yay instead of Friday, and people would find it cool. He was considered charming, and I didn't get why. He spoke too much. He wasn't pleasant to share a flat with. He had like, you know, verbal diarrhea? Right, so he always had the bum version. But everyone loved him. Compare his perceived coolness to me. In my Dungeons & Dragons society, I was elected antisocial secretary. But everyone loved him. I was having to act suave. He was just considered naturally suave. I mean, we got on well enough. That is, until one Wednesday morning. I'm in the flat with my housemates and Dimitri's girlfriend, Brie. She was from America. She was everything I was not. She was confident, intelligent, ambitious. She'd moved to another country to study, for God's sake. What did I achieve by that age, you know? I once poured a pint of beer for Jude Law. Don't know why, I've never been in the same room as him. That was optimistic. I don't know, even as I was pouring it, I was like, I don't know where he is. So we just sat around the kitchen table. I mean, in walks Dimitri, who asked me in front of everyone, "Hey, Glenn, how was Newsreader Society last night?" And I am stunned. I can feel my social life come crashing down around me. Firstly, I have no idea how he'd heard about that. Not that I have any shame in being part of a uni society where we'd all meet up and talk like newsreaders for a couple of hours. And actually, sorry, Jethro, can we try that again with a bit more drama, like a sort of like dun, dun, dun sort of noise? Okay, so Dimitri walks in and he asks, "Hey, Glenn, how was Newsreader Society last night?" No, Jethro, the dread I feel from Neil Diamond isn't necessarily felt by everyone else in this room. Also, remember, the bigger the hit, the more expensive the copyright. I really don't want to be spending all our budget on this. So, Newsreader Society was just a group of people who loved journalism, loved the news, but there weren't many of us in the society, so how did Dimitri know about it? Only I know the details every Tuesday evening. Only I know where we meet, the Students' Union. Only I know what time it's on. It's 6 o'clock. So Newsreader Society, we had a 24-hour rolling news station on student radio. It was incredibly time intensive and it was low budget as well. We actually had to say our own bongs because we couldn't afford the rights from Big Ben, this massive guy who used to run the sound effects library. Before you ask Jethro, I don't have his contact details, sorry. I was struggling to juggle my university studies with a 24-hour rolling news student radio station, but I couldn't afford to miss out on a big social. You know what the news is like? If you miss it once, it's really hard to catch up. I'm still on David Cameron. We'd gone out the previous night on a wild newsreader social. Pubs, bars, house party. We'd hired a news-themed stripper called Sir Leather MacDonald. But how on earth did Dimitri know what I got up to in my professional life? I hadn't told anyone. But then I start to piece it together. And I think he's friends with Putin. He's over in the UK. He knows info about me. What if he's a spy? And then I see an opportunity to salvage my reputation at university. If I can find a way to catch him out for being a spy, doesn't that make me a better spy? And won't that make me seem cool in front of everyone? And I start hatching a plan to catch him in the act. A plan so crazy, it might not work. As soon as he goes out for his lecture in the morning, I sneak into Dimitri's room. And all the while, I'm thinking to myself, this is so unlike me. What if I get caught? What am I going to do? A real spy would immediately bite down on a cyanide capsule, but that's just not me. It's too quick. I'd want to go out like my old headmaster, beset by several financial scandals and facing life in prison. He ran a bath, dropped a slow cooker in, died like 6 hours later. As I rummage through Dimitri's room, I'm so scared the whole time that I'm going to get caught. I have been timid my whole life, and that has never changed. And it doesn't come from nowhere. As a kid, I was terrified whenever I heard that key in the lock because I knew my dad was trying to get out of the bathroom. I can't see anything in Dimitri's room. I don't even know what I'm meant to be looking for. Surveillance is not my strong suit, even to this day. Like, there's a girl I was in love with when I was at uni, and I'm finding it impossible to find her on Instagram at the moment because she's taken her husband's name. It's like, you're making it difficult for me to marry you. So what can I see in Dimitri's room? Books, chair, a bunch of foreign currency scattered across his desk. I'm not proud of this. I stole some of his money. He never found out. I topped his wallet up again with water. Big map of Russia, so what? I was looking for documents that would prove he's using a different name or something, but there's nothing. Dmitry Antonov, that was officially his name, annoyingly. Said so in every single one of his passports. Nothing to suggest he's a spy, but a lot to suggest this guy is a loser. Like, he's got one of those novelty lighters. It's in the shape of a Russian Makarov pistol, and I couldn't resist just giving it a go. I guess the way it works is when you fire it, the friction of the bullet hitting the wall heats up your cigarette. It's a futile search, but maybe I could catch him in the act later. I mean, what do you do when you don't trust someone's actions? You can set up a camera, of course, a great way to catch someone you're suspicious of. I mean, looking back, my former next-door neighbour must have been so suspicious of the women at his gym. I leave his room, and luckily, it's not the only chance I get that day to catch him in the act. That evening, we're going out on the town. The whole flat, me, Dimitri, my housemates, his girlfriend Bree, we're doing a pub crawl, and I don't think Dimitri suspects I snuck into his room at all. We go to the first pub where the music is incredible. How old are these clips, Jethro? Remember when you did the Russian music one perfectly? Just more of that, please. There was no music. Here we go. So in this pub, we started to, this is pretty good foley, actually, Jethro. I do feel like I'm in a pub in 2006.
Have you heard? Hitler's just invited Czechoslovakia.
Come on, man. Can we just get a realistic modern pub sound effect? So we need, like, sort of contactless machines, pool table, a fruit machine. There we go. So the annoying thing about buying a movie's drinks is that we start... Jethro, are we paying for this money? Just cut the effect. We're going to do it a cappella, okay? So, my plan for the night. We're going to get Dmitri so drunk that he starts spilling secrets and admits that he's a Russian agent. Unfortunately, at the first pub, vodka is having no effect on Dmitri. He is knocking back shot after shot. I got him the cheapest, most powerful vodka I can find. It's called Crimson Tsar. 75%. 75% of people die after drinking it. And he's just knocking it back. Like, you know how Frosties have got a welcoming, smiling tiger on the front and golden syrup is a dead lion covered in flies? That lion had just drunk Crimson Tsar. And Dmitri is shot after shot and he's fine. And he hands me one and he says, have this. This will put hairs on your chest. Right, how does this spy know about my baby smooth chest? I'm plying him with shots, but he keeps trying to force one on me. I keep pretending to get distracted by the dance floor. I keep changing the subject. I'm like, no, I don't need to drink. Come on, man, let's dance. We love this song, don't we? Sing along with me. Sweet Caroline. Jethro, to be fair, that is free, but that was incredibly incorrect. I realise I can't distract Dmitri forever. He hands me a shot of Crimson Tsar. I bite the bullet, I down the shot, and instantly I pass out. I wake up an hour later in the back of a car, and I panic. Have I been abducted? Am I being taken to Russia? No. Nothing to worry about. I'm in a cab and it's pulling up outside my flat. The driver says a guy called Dmitri put me in there. How does this spy know my address? I'm being unreasonable. We live together. I get out of the cab and I watch it drive away. Sorry, Jethro, not to keep going on at you. I've just looked through the show's invoice notes. I thought this was a misprint. Did you spend £8,000 on a Kia Sportage for that sound effect? Maybe we just leave the effects for today. Is that okay? Thank you. The next day, I'm hungover as hell. But the plus side is, the camera hasn't been discovered by Dmitri. I'm feeling good. I'm going to watch the footage next time he's out and work out what he's up to. My housemates seem to have accepted that I'm a spy, and I was properly living the spy life. I now had a burner phone, for instance, which was actually quite a burden. I mean, who's got space for a second landline? So at breakfast, we all gather around the table in a student halls, and he comes in, and Dmitri says, "Hey, Glenn Roger Moore." Now, please don't laugh. Cards on the table, that's my real name. Is my real full name. But how did he know it? And yes, obviously, I know I should have changed it. Nicolas Cage, for instance, his real name is Nicolas Coppola. His uncle was the director of The Godfather, but he didn't want to be just handed roles because his uncle's Francis Ford Coppola. So Nicolas Cage made life harder for himself just to not be seen as a Nepo baby and achieve everything he achieved based on his own merits. What a pathetic waste of nepotism. I tell you who I do respect, Moby. You know that the DJ Moby, Moby is not his real name. It's because he's distantly related to Herman Melville, who wrote Moby Dick. That's how you nepo baby, baby. That's not even the name of the relative, that's the name of the fish. That's like if George Lucas's son changed his name to Jonathan Star Wars. Which brings me to me. My name is Glenn Roger Moore. My dad is called Roger Moore and didn't have the decency to be the Roger Moore. The closest I've ever been to nepotism was when both me and my dad were both unemployed. So I don't rightly appreciate that this spy has outed my full name in front of everyone in my flat. But crucially, on this day in 2006, somewhere in London, a Russian spy is ingesting poison, and at a university in the north of England, a Russian spy is spreading his. And Dmitri comes into the kitchen and he says, "Hey, Glenn Roger Moore, how are you feeling about your big show tomorrow night?" And what other societies was he going to find out I'd been in? He didn't know about D&D Society. He didn't know about Hide and Seek Club. He didn't know about the Alanis Morissette number one fan club. So that means he must have been referring to... Oh, God. Okay, don't judge me. I like the performing arts. I love the performing arts. That much is clear. But do you know Shitface Shakespeare?
Yeah.
Right, whole cast of people performing one of the bard's plays, but one of the cast members each night is absolutely hammered. So I wasn't in that. Not that I wouldn't have loved to have been. I mean, I was so into Shakespeare at uni, I thought ass play was referring to A Midsummer Night's Dream. No, I was actually in something called Sinn Féin Shakespeare. Do you know it? Like the cast perform a real Shakespeare play, except each night on rotation, one of the cast is a fervent Irish nationalist. Have you? Oh, they get up to all sorts of shenanigans, all Sinn Féinigans, and yeah. You gotta watch it, man. It is absolutely Sinn Féin in the membrane. I loved it. Because you sat there being like, well, which one of the cast is it? Probably not Richard II. No, get a ticket, man. It's so fun to see when the shin hits the fane. Anyway, He asks me how my Sinn Féin Shakespeare show went down last night. I mean, I should be proud of being in that society. It's artistic. And is this not a great day for art? On this very date, November the 1st, back in 1512, Michelangelo's Sistine Chapel was first unveiled. I love the Sistine Chapel. What an artistic achievement. I mean, I really love Michelangelo's Statue of David because that reassures me dicks are meant to be that size. But Sinn Féin Shakespeare, I mean, this is as uncool as the News Reading Society. He is ruining my image. We're playing cat and mouse. He's spying on me, pretending he's not. I'm spying on him, pretending I'm not. It's almost like we're a team lying to each other. I mean, there's no eye in gaslighting. And I find that there's not. There's not. Don't look it up, Matt. Don't look it up. You're going crazy. I know when he asked me how my show went, he meant it in a mean way. It's not a compliment to bring that society up. It sounds nice, but it isn't. It's like if I said, oh, your face is really symmetrical. And you're like, oh, thanks. And I go, yeah, but horizontally, so it's just two foreheads. It's not nice. So me and Dimitri are standing in the kitchen face to face. Him a spy who thinks I'm a spy. Me pretending to be a spy, but knowing he's a spy. And it is so tense, you can cut the tension with 10,000 spoons. Jethro, did you literally buy 10,000 spoons? Never mind. Dimitri goes out for the day, and I'm left humiliated once again in front of my friends. But I tell you who was nice about the whole situation. Dimitri's girlfriend, Brie. She said, oh, the show sounded good. And in that moment, I just noticed a bit of a spark between us. I don't know. And then she hung around the flat for the rest of the day, even after Dimitri went out in the evening. She was still there. And I made us dinner, bought a Charlie Bigham lasagna because it had been reduced to £47. But there was just something romantic about the atmosphere. I lit some candles. I mean, a true thing about November the 1st is it's scented candle day. Didn't always used to be, but it got a rebrand when people weren't too keen on National Fart All You Want Day. I've been thrown into this fantasy world, so I just hurl myself into it head first. Sleeping with the enemy is exactly the sort of thing you're meant to do. And I'm not proud of this, but I was killing two birds with one stone. Sorry, with one stony. We could be honest with how we felt about each other, and I could get my revenge on Dimitri. There was just something between me and his girlfriend. We both dressed for the occasion. She was wearing those skin-tight contact lenses. It started to feel like something out of Love Actually, and that the way we treated each other doesn't really hold up to scrutiny in 2025. Look, in terms of what happened between me and Brie that evening, that is for me to know and for you to find out. Now, we had sex and it was amazing. Jethro, no, that's gross. That's really gross. Also, that's from the Premier League, so you know that's just cost us upwards of £1,000. Please just... Okay. It was a wonderful experience. Yes, the sex was as stilted and formal as I have a habit of doing. I mean, it was not the first time I had to remind myself in bed that actually we are a shoes-off flat. But I was happy to leave my rivalry with Dimitri as soon as she left. We're even, as far as I'm concerned. He's never going to find out about what I did because it was just us two in the room. And if he does find out, that just proves he is a spy. Now, later on, I'm in a good mood. Not just because of what happened with Dimitri's girlfriend, but also because I just found out that Margot Robbie's an anagram of Robert Mugabe. So don't look it up. Brie will never say anything, I'll never say anything, so I should be safe. But if Dimitri truly is a spy, he'll know. And sure enough, when he comes back to the flat, he says out of the blue that he wants to come to Sinn Féin Shakespeare rehearsals one day. And I'm suspicious that he's using it to get closer to me or to make fun of me more. But I have no choice. To lower any suspicions, Dimitri has to come with me. I'm going to start him small at the society. He's only got to say one line, if it please your grace, which is Shakespeare for no worries if not. We arrive early. I remember it vividly. It was pouring down with rain. Absolutely torrential rain. Are we sure that's rain? Jeffrey, like 100%? Okay, so it was raining really heavily. And what happened? Well, there's a grunt, man. Come on. So we arrive at this hall. I just feel very unnerved bringing Dimitri with me. I mean, what if he's using us meeting in this big empty hall as an opportunity to confront me, to abduct me and take me to Russia? I'm not cut out for that. I wouldn't stand up to interrogation. I mean, sometimes if a water fountain I'm drinking from is too splashy, I start revealing state secrets I didn't even know I knew. God, what if he gets me sent to Russia and they start torturing me? I won't last a second. I mean, for God's sake, I faint at the sound of the word blood. Sorry. Thank you, Jethro. Sorry. Could you hand me that bottle of water, please? The government supply of gold is actually stored beneath Kensington Palace. Sorry. Sorry, excuse me. We get to this huge empty hall, the kind that echoes with everything you say. And I say, hello.
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 That kind of echoey hall. He leaves to go to the bathroom and I say,
echo.
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 There's no answer.
I can say anything I want.
I can say anything I want.
I can say anything I want.
And I'm in this hall on my own. I'm having a great time. I say,
I was Jack the Ripper.
I was Jack the Ripper.
I was Jack the Ripper.
This is brilliant. And then I say out of nowhere, I go, I slept with your girlfriend.
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 I slept with your
girlfriend. In a situation I'd simply never been in before, the echo wouldn't go away. I was doing everything in my power. I was swatting the air. I was like, shut up, just shut up. And then before you knew it, just a second, Dimitri. I'm waving a tea towel at it like it's a smoke alarm. No, in a second, Dimitri, don't come in. I eventually managed to open a window and I wafted the echo out. I opened the door and there he was, looking extremely suspicious of me. Suddenly, the breeze from the open window made his coat flutter open to reveal a concealed... Oh, thank God, it was just his novelty lighter. I recovered, I let him into the room and made flustered small talk, but I was sweating buckets and I worried. And I said to him, Dimitri, it's because I think you're a spy. And he was stunned at the idea. He said, why on earth do you think I'm a spy? He said, I genuinely really wanted to do this. You want to put a secret. I just care a lot about the performing arts. And look, I'm sorry for saying your full name in front of everyone. When you got drunk and I put you in that cab, I went to put £20 in your wallet and I saw your name on your driving license. And News Reading Society as well. I listened to it because in my country, we don't have a free press. I would be so proud to be a journalist if I were able. Glenn, you're sweating buckets. Are you okay? I tried to pass it off. I thought, my God, the guilt and shame passing through me. Dimitri was nice all along. He was just unintentionally embarrassing me. It's like that time I bumped into a girl I knew when I was performing at the Edinburgh Fringe and she really enthusiastically went, Glenn, what are you doing here? Which was a damning indictment of my publicity team. She didn't mean to be horrible. I've disrupted Dimitri's relationship. I've invaded his personal space. And for what? And now he's asking kindly, hey? And I just tried to pass it off. I went, yeah, of course, I'll be having fun. Just having fun.
A slut.
The Windows treatments.